Welcome to Language Access is No Vitamin, an essential podcast for those shaping the future of healthcare in America. Let's transform our healthcare system from seeing language access as an optional vitamin to the cure of patient-centered care. Welcome to Language Access is No Vitamin. Empecemos. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Language Access is No Vitamin. I'm Joa Tudela, and I am your strategic language partner when it comes to multi-language centric patient care. And today is our last episode of the season, and I am very excited because I have today with me my dear friend Mireya Perez, and I'm going to introduce you to Mireya immediately because there's a lot of good conversations that are going to be happening today. So Mireya began her career as a certified medical interpreter and has since gained over a decade of experience breaking down language barriers in healthcare and education. After honing her skills as a medical interpreter in both a general and children's hospital, Mireya spent nearly a decade as a staff interpreter in the K-12 public education district, where she championed the vital role of trained interpreters in education. Today, Mireya is the proud creator and host of an amazing podcast called Brand the Interpreter, where she shares the stories and perspective of language professionals from around the world. With a master's degree in communications and a passion for topics like creativity, personal branding, and strategic communication management in the interpreting industry, Mireya is committed to continue elevating the voices and stories of language professionals worldwide. So please join me in saying hello and welcoming Mireya.
Hello.
Hi, Mireya. How are you?
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much for being here. I am actually very excited to have you here because one of my first podcasts was your podcast. And it was a great experience really being able to share, you know, my story of why I am in the language access, but I'm very specifically focused on the operational and implementation side, not the language services. Mm-hmm. And your podcast is just amazing because you get to hear so many stories, so many different angles of language access that we don't really think about when it comes to either translators and interpreters. So tell me a little bit about How Brand the Interpreter started. Like, why did you decide that it was time to give voice to interpreters?
Thank you. Thank you for the great question. And of course, as I mentioned, I appreciate the invitation. I want to say that it was just a variety of different things that sort of came together. They fused together all at the same time to just explode into this crazy idea for me, at the very least, of putting something together that was going to be broadcasted out to the public. But I think more than anything, it was my desire to be able to connect with the stories of other individuals. Their experiences is really what I had in mind. I just really felt that I wanted to hear more about how language professionals overcame the challenges that they were in, because after a very specific amount of time, I came to realize that the language profession and the services that were provided enveloped so much more than just the provision of services, meaning more than just interpreting and translating, that there was a host of other things that needed to take place in order for it to be done appropriately. So my desire was really to just find out more about the industry and really come to find out if it came to play into the very specific niche that I was in at that time, which was education. So I wanted to know if there were other areas in which there were similarities or crossovers, and to spark ideas more than anything. And then I thought, well, gee, if I could ask questions and find out more about other professions and how they could relate to what I'm doing, could others also benefit from it? I commuted for a long time. I still do for a long time, meaning over an hour sometimes. And I felt, well, if there's other commuters out there like me that are just bored from the same songs that play in the radio over and over, why can't we listen to something that has to do with what we do? Because what I felt is I was listening to other podcasts and I was getting motivated to do things, maybe even start conversations by the time I got to the office. And so I was like, well, what if we do something similar that would motivate us by the time we all got to our roles as the interpreter? And thus, Brand the Interpreter was born.
I love it. I love it because, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like when I listen, like, oh, I want to comment on this. Like, I want to give back. So it's very interactive in the stories. You can always find a way to connect with all of your speakers, regardless if it's just, you know, from their professional mishaps or, you know, why they got into the industry or just the passion of, you know, improving others' lives, rather, even if it's, you know, education or healthcare, the passion is always really there. And I think it's amazing that, you know, you are going to be in the last episode of the season, because throughout the season, we have talked about different angles of language access, specifically, you know, explaining the need, like why this is not just, you know, a nice to have, regardless of, you know, it's the law, you have to do it. We're going beyond the law. It's like, yes, it is a law, you got to do it whether you like it or not, but there's other reasons why it's not just a nice to have. And there's standards that we have to not only meet, but we have to go higher than them because they're in a lot of places very low. But having you here, it's an opportunity to hear from the, you know, all those interpreting stories, all those stories, you know, that the interpreters already have a voice, you know, in all industries. This is mostly for healthcare, but in any industry, many of the times we don't bring the interpreter, right? We don't bring them to the table when we talk about language access, about how we're improving the services, what's wrong with the services. None of that conversations many times have the interpreters. Maybe if we get lucky, we'll have the manager, you know, or the coordinator. But we don't really have the voice of the interpreter at the high level explaining to the C-suite what's going on from the perspective. So I would love to hear, you know, what you've heard, like what are the similarities? And it can be beyond, you know, healthcare, of course, because I'm sure you'll find them the similar. The issues are, you know, across industry when it comes to the interpreter voice. So tell me, you know, what you've heard, what are the similarities, and where are these interpreters standing on this?
All over the place, really. I think that the main point that I've gotten through the last 4 years of the podcast has really been that interpreters, aside from being having the ability to speak more than one language and being gifted in that sense, are gifted with many other skill sets. And therefore, if given the opportunity, they're not only able to speak on behalf of directly on behalf of the language services, but I think also they add a very valuable point as to how we could embed these services into something that is part of the fabric of the culture of the organization, as opposed to it being something that is an afterthought or something that is believed to be the responsibility of one person, meaning the interpreter or translator, excuse me, or that of a department, right? Instead of it being thought of as the entirety of an organization, because it is at the end of the day, the entire organization who is providing the service, not just one person or one department. And so I think that really the idea of hearing the voices of other interpreters is seeing how wide that cast can be sent out and be spread and being able to sort of bring in all of our skill sets in support of language access services. So I think that's really what I've enjoyed the most, is just being able to hear the angle of each individual interpreter, language professional, how they're able to combine their strengths, their skill sets, and not just provide the service, but provide it in a way in which it's unique, it's different, and it helps the entire culture, not just themselves. So I think that's mainly the main thing that I've identified is that language access involves, as it should, so many different components, and the interpreter, once well-versed in what they do, can absolutely bring in those other elements in support of the organization.
I love what you're saying about, you know, being part of that interdisciplinary team, because a lot of places look at it as just like, oh, it's just an add-on, and it's not. It should be, like, I always tell, you know, my clients, like, just like you feel comfortable going to, you know, a cardiologist and ask for, you know, a recommendation or, you know, suggestion, the interpreter is also a specialist. It's just that their specialty happens to be language, right? So it's just really part of the team. So it's not more or less than just going to another colleague and be like, hey, I need your abilities. I just need you to, you know, those are language abilities, but it's not no different. Like, look at it from, you know, a part of your team, not just, you know, an extra task that you have to do. And I think that really changes people's mind and perception of the interpreter.
Yeah, I think we also need to look at the fact that many of us that are providing these services in a community setting, the community interpreter also challenges or is challenged by the minimum requirements currently of a community interpreter. So when you have something as basic as, you know, be at least 18 years of age, have a high school diploma or equivalent, have some sort of 40-hour minimum training and language proficiency, I think that individuals that work within that organization that understand potentially the minimum requirements are thinking they're dealing with or working with people that maybe potentially are not at, I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it, I'm going to be blunt, at their level. And so they're basically thinking that the conversation is at a higher level potentially than the individuals that are hiring. When we, the ones that are providing the work, truly understand what it takes to be able to provide the service appropriately, adequately, meaningfully, and therefore are always coming in at a much higher level than the minimum requirements. Many of your interpreters are coming in with bachelor's, master's degrees to provide the service because they understand what it actually takes. So I think that, like I mentioned earlier, there are a lot of elements that I feel take place as to why individuals aren't necessarily being brought into the conversation, that being one of them.
Yeah, and I love what you're saying because that misconception or that low standard, right, for hiring, like that basic, also makes people think that it's very easy job. It's right, like you don't need anything, just 40 hours. You can get that in a week. Like that's all the training. And I like phlebotomy, right? Like it's like a 40-hour week, like a 1 week training for phlebotomy and that's it. But there's so much more. It's the language, it's the skills, the note-taking, understanding the standards, the practice, especially when you're doing more than just, you know, community interpreter. You have to still know side translation. You have to know simultaneous. You have to know all the skills, whether you use them or not. And then in addition to that, the technology, all the terminology, that's one of the hardest things. To me, it's like we expect interpreters to know every specialty, right, within healthcare. Like you go from pediatrics to oncology, and then in 2 hours, you are in cardiology, and you need to know all the terminology of this. But then providers have their own specialty, right? You can't ask anything related to your bones, to your endocrinologist, because they'll be like, nope, different appointment, different person, right? But we are expected to do that. And we're not valued for all that knowledge, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why platforms such as this is important, so that we do speak about these concepts and share the information about what it actually takes to be able to do the service meaningfully or provide the service meaningfully. That there's so many other parts to just the ability to speak the language. In addition to everything that you just mentioned, which is absolutely on point, is that as interpreters, we have to understand communication in a way as well. Every individual speaks in a very different way. And so for us to be able to just figure out the way in which they're providing their message or the way in which they're conveying their message, it has to make sense for one, in order for it to make sense into our target languages. So there's just so many different elements involved.
Talk to me a little bit more about training, because I know you also are involved in training interpreters. So are we going to agree that the 40 hours are not enough, right?
Like, this is not.
So yeah. Where would you like to see it? Like if, you know, Mirena can put like the standard, like what do you think? Do you think we should have required of a practicum, for example? I'm a fan of that. I love to teach in courses that have practicums, because I feel like if they don't have that practice and we're just giving them information and that's it upside, I don't think it's that comprehensive. So what do you think we should be going towards when we're looking at true quality training for interpreters?
I think it should be a degree program that we should be pursuing in the long run. But I think at the minimum, if we're going to start, we should start with raising the standard of the 40-hour minimum to potentially something that's longer, 60, 80-hour minimum training, to include all these other elements that are very important in when we're going through the training program and actually what we're going to see once we're out in the field. Especially because the field evolves. Everything evolves, and you know there are many more things that we should be included in or rather that should be included in training programs that are not, that we have to go pursue once we're out in the field, because we come across it and realize, hey, this wasn't part of what I learned. the 40-hour minimum currently, and I think I'm piggybacking off of others' idea in terms of it should be something more close to 60 hours, if possible. And that does include topics such as currently our current situation, technology, remote interpreting, all those things that now we have to go pursue on our own if we want to further our studies. This is something that is required of us almost immediately once we step foot in our jobs. And so why not bring in these elements, evolve the way in which we're training our community interpreters to include this as part of the required training, to include practicum hours before we're actually calling ourselves, you know, that trained interpreters going out there in the field. Still, I feel haphazardly, because it's still not exactly everything that we need necessarily, especially when it comes to the modes of interpreting. Like you mentioned earlier, being able to get trained for those specific modes in a 40-hour program, there's only so much you can give students or participants that it's just not enough for them to really truly practice it to the point where they feel confident enough to do all three modes of interpreting once they're out in the field.
Yeah, not to mention the terminology, right? Because regardless of which industry, it's not just health, right? Education has its own terminology, legal has its own terminology. Whatever area you're going to specialize in, you're really going to have to learn that terminology. And yeah, 40 hours is definitely not enough for it.
Definitely not enough. No. Now that I'm on the other side of, you know, actually providing the training for, 40-hour program, I'm always like, this is an important topic and we could definitely expand more, but there's just not enough time to be able to dive deeper, which why I truly do feel that we need more than that.
And let's, since most of the audience here are actually leadership and, you know, people that can, you know, make changes in health organizations, let's talk about the importance, because it's not just the training, right? It's not just hire the interpreter that's already trained. It's about continuing education. And let's not forget the interpreter when it comes to continuing education, because the 40 hours are not enough and there's always new things. So why would organizations, why should they invest in, you know, sending their interpreters, their language service employees to, you know, conferences, to, you know, extra trainees? Like, what is out there and why we should be doing that as well?
Yeah, I think when we look at it, this is a perfect example of looking at language access as part of the organization, meaning it's embedded in what it already has created in its structure. You think about anyone that is a professional in the industry, anyone that is considered a professional within the organization, you would require or almost expect that they're continuing to learn more about improving their technique, whether that be a doctor, whether that be a nurse, whether that be, you know, anyone in the health field, if we're looking at it from that angle, would be expected to continue learning, because it's not a one and done thing. You don't learn to be or go to school to be a doctor and then you're done for the rest of your life in terms of learning. I would hope not. And if that is the case, let me know where you're at, so we're not going to those places. I think that we're really looking at always improving, as I mentioned earlier, because society, everything around us evolves. So too does our profession. And being able to ensure that your language professional has access to continued professional development, not because it is something that they seek in order for themselves, just for themselves to be able to improve, but I think that because it is expected of an organization, truly elevate just that feeling of I am a professional, and I am a professional that is recognized in my industry and in my organization. And I think you look at it even as an individual from a different angle. You're seeking that professional development because you want to make sure that you are representing the organization that you're working for to that higher standard. And organizations should be thinking about their professionals the same way. They should be thinking about, hey, you're part of our organization that is considered a profession, that is considered a professional. The expectation is that you're out there seeking continued professional development so that you can sharpen or improve your skills, or maybe even better yet, widen your skills into something else. It doesn't necessarily always have to be so focused on the language specific skill set. I feel that there's always something that you could add that can bring value to the job that lies outside of potentially the topic of interpreting or translation.
I love that because in addition to all what you said, we have new technologies, we have new disease. With COVID hit, right? We had to learn all this terminology most people didn't know about like this. So I always tell that to my students, I'm like, if you're going to be an interpreter, you need to, be on point. You need to know what's happening because you need to know trends. You know, if we are in flu season, then you're going to start seeing more of those type of appointments. So make sure you refresh your terminology on that. If there's a new disease coming in, you need to know a new medication. It's not just like a one-time thing and done. It's just like being any other health provider. You need to know what's out there and what's coming so you can prepare yourself for those appointments because they'll see them, you'll see them. That's as simple as that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
And so one of the things that I would love for you to, give a different perspective, even though I'm sure we'll agree with this, but like, how would you tell, the leadership of organizations about not using their bilingual staff unless, one, they're tested. And even if they're tested, they're not tested to be interpreters, right? So one, when to use those bilinguals and why not use them? I guess the two part, why not use them as interpreters? So how would you explain that to leadership?
One of the first things that I really push now that I know better, and I think that language and terminology has definitely a lot to do with the way in which the role is seen, is I no longer utilize the word use interpreters or use bilingual staff. I now choose consciously to work with interpreters or choose the word work with individuals, because I think that even from that level, we're already thinking about the role differently. How do we work with a trained interpreter? How do we work with bilingual staff? As opposed to choosing someone that happens to be there and happens to speak the language, let me use them to support me. So I feel like that's almost, just for starters, I read that one time, I remember, and to whoever pushed that out one day on LinkedIn, all the credit to you. I just remember reading that and it really resonating with me and thinking it's true. Because I think as language professionals, if what we're trying to do is change a mindset of individuals that we work with, you don't hear any other professional saying, go use a social worker, go use a doctor, go use a nurse. We hear them say, well, let's go work with a social worker so that we can identify the issues of this family or something of the sort. So I think that beginning with that conversation, I approach it as from that angle. How do we appropriately work with the individuals that we are currently working with? Bilingual individuals that are there have hopefully been assessed for their fluency, because that's another issue, right? That they've hopefully been assessed for fluency, and you're able to work with them in the ways in which they can communicate directly with the people that you're servicing. Working with interpreters requires a bit more structure. So not necessarily to say that bilingual staff doesn't require a structure, because once again, mentioning it's just that approach of ensuring that you've got assessments created either internally or you're connected with, your organization is connected with an organization that provides language proficiency. You want to ensure that individuals are not just self-reporting themselves as being bilingual, but that you can say for a fact, we've vetted them through a process that has been vetted to be able to say, yes, these individuals can communicate directly with those that we serve. And then, of course, in addition to that is being able to work with interpreters that have gone through the training, that understand how it is they're supposed to be providing the service. Working with them entails exactly that. That means that you would have to create structures that support you as the service provider, but also supports those that you're servicing, the individuals that speak a language other than English. So being able to work with your interpreters in a way in which elevates that you're providing, I think that it just, there's so much more to it that I think it would definitely take the whole time, but creating systems and processes that are going to ensure just differentiating between a bilingual individual that has that bilingual ability in addition to their main role, and then the actual in-house interpreter, or pure role of interpreter, and what that entails in order to ensure that you're working with them appropriately to provide the service. So much more, though.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, because it totally makes sense. Change the language. So you start with that, everything else changes, just like the conversation about stop using limited English proficient, because the limited is just automatically puts all of this stereotypes of all the limitations and inabilities, instead of just simply saying they speak a language other than English, right? Like, it just makes the whole different feel from the beginning. So I love that. I'm going to start using that, a bit more cautious as well with the word of using, because you don't use providers, right? You work with them. So I love it.
Yeah, I agree. Right. No, I'm telling you, I learned that. And I was like, from that point forward, I'm like, oh, I'm in on that. I'm totally trying to change. But yeah, it's so hard, because even us as language professionals, we're so used to what others have deemed the appropriate terminology to use for everything that we're involved in. And so we also, it's hard for us to break away from those bad habits. So that's why I mentioned I'm very conscious about, I slow down when it comes to that point. Because, you know, when we get to start talking about this conversation, we just go, and it just becomes so natural. The flow just comes out, all the words come out, and then you're like, oh, I don't want to use that word anymore. I want to use this word instead. So when it comes to that specific moment, I tend to slow down so that I'm conscious as to what I'm about, how I'm about to say it. And definitely that one is now, I feel it's embedded, hopefully. And if I've ever said the word used before, that was a past me that no longer exists.
I love that. It's part of cultural competence, right? We have to learn and accept it and change. And it all starts with being, you know, self-conscious first and be like, wait, no, what am I saying? And then it just becomes natural. We want to start using the correct language. I love that. So Mireya, I ask all my guests, you know, why do they think, like for them, why is language access not a vitamin?
Yes, that's such a great question. I love that. And I honestly feel it really has to do with the fact that it's what language access is not. It's not a check mark, right? It's not a check off the box sort of thing. Like, it's a one and done deal. Like, oh, okay, we hired the interpreter, they're providing the services. We have maybe a language access plan written out to ensure that this is occurring. We're done. That's it. We never have to think about language access again. But in fact, I think we understand that is not the case, that anything that is created as a structure within an organization always requires that monitoring component, always requires that going back to just ensuring that all the systems are consistently taking place where there should be taking place. I think that any well-run machine, we know that we don't just leave it alone and never, ever think about it again. There has to be some sort of coming back to it and ensuring that everything's flowing the way it should flow, that there's opportunities for improvement. And if there are, how do we implement them? How do we revisit them? How do we have conversations around this topic? And potentially, even most importantly, if not just as important, is asking individuals their feedback and how they feel about the systems that have been created. So language access is not a vitamin, because we don't have to just take the one pill and then forget about it and not ever think about it again. And it takes care of itself. It requires, I think, definitely individuals that want to ensure that the service is being provided appropriately, meaningfully. I think that's one of my favorite words from the way in which things are written out for language access, and the text that is written out from federal government, is it's got to be meaningful. It's got to make sense to those that you are serving, and it's got to be in a way in which they feel like they are part of the process, just like anyone else. They are part of the services that are being provided. And so for that, we need to ensure that there's not just the consistency component, but also the monitoring, the compliance, the follow-up, and then the checking in to make sure that it's being delivered in the way in which it should be, meaning you've created those standards to do so.
I love that. And that really, it's a really good gateway to our last segment of the episode, which is the myth. All right. So the myth that we discussed earlier was exactly that. Like, why is language access not a one-time thing? And you really just, in your previous question, explained why. So I'm going to change it a little bit. And I want to say, for Mireya, how often should we be looking at our language access plans? How often should we be testing our staff? How often should we be providing professional development for everybody that works with interpreters? How often should we be working on language access?
Wow, that's a really great question. I think it really depends on the structure of the organization. So meaning to say, what are the systems that you do have in place in order to ensure that everything's running smoothly? Creating a language access plan would definitely be one of the main components, I think, of ensuring language access is being provided adequately, because you have a reference point, something to go back to know what you're even supposed to be monitoring. So being able to just say, hey, if it's number one, our in-house staff, being able to say, do we even have an in-house staff first, and checking on that, checking to see what is going to be the role of the interpreter within this organization. What is the expectation? How will we be working with them? How will they be working with us? So first is, you know, you're going to be looking at the people that are providing the service directly. What is that going to look like for you? And then come all the other elements. If it's a system thing in which all the different departments are going to be part of the process, then you're going to want to ensure potentially compliance and coming back to checking that data to see if people are in compliance. What is it looking like? What are the gaps? I would say at a maximum, every year you want to come back to check, because you want to make sure that what is being provided, there's some measurable data that can help you make those improvements if needed. But I think that at a minimum, at the very least, even if you're doing, depending on what it is that you're measuring or what it is that you're looking at, even every 6 months, especially if it's something that's brand new that you're rolling out within the organization. You want to make sure that you know what you're going to come back to and be able to sort of gauge how we're doing, how what's happening, what's working, what is not working, what is potentially the people that we're working with within the organization, what are they feeling like? You know, are they overwhelmed by the new process? Can we improve something in the process, in the system, in order to ensure that all points of contact, which is not just the individuals that speak a language other than English, but also the providers and the staff, the internal staff, how are they feeling with the changes? What can be done to improve? So that's why in the beginning of the episode, I said there's so many elements. There's so many elements involved in ensuring that we're putting together something that is robust and that is a part of the system of the organization and not just something that we check off and we forget about it, because there has to be continuous improvement. Like any other system that is in place, we have to ensure that we're coming back to it and focus on those key elements. What is that? Those measurables that we're looking at to ensure that we are getting the outcomes that we want, which actually is something I should mention. That's perhaps one of the first things we should start with, is what are we looking at? What is the big picture that we want to come back to? What is that objective? It shouldn't just be providing the service. It should be much more than that. And so we're looking at it from that angle. We know where it is we're trying to head. You know, where are we heading? And then work backwards almost to creating the systems to ensure that we're heading in the right direction.
I love it. I love it. And I did everything you just said. Thank you so much, Mireya. It's been amazing to have you here and, you know, share your knowledge, which is huge and amazing. And I love that you share it and you also bring other people into your podcast. So I invite everybody to check out Mireya's podcast, Brand the Interpreter. And again, thank you, Mireya. Thank you, everybody. I am Joa Tudela, and I am your strategic language partner for Multicultural Patient Center Care. We will see you around.